desperation of dropping pacers when, as often as the pacing goes well, it can run amok. And it just seemed to us, let these athletes come race and put on the show that we know they're capable of putting on. So once we made the decision, which was over the couple months after the marathon, I knew immediately who was the first athlete we wanted to sign was, and that's the great Henrik Romala. Henrik, to me and to us, epitomizes racing. He epitomizes the best of marathon running. He always lays it all on the line. Seeing our races up close and personal, year in and year out, if you're next to Henrik on a lead vehicle, be it in New York or being it last 2 weekends ago in London, he works hard from the beginning, and there is no resting, and he will be sure to keep things mighty interesting on November 3rd, I'm sure. So that's what we decided to do. That led to Henrik being our first athlete signed, and we're happy to answer any questions and talk about this more.
Thank you, Mary. What I would like to do is now introduce and just have Henrik make a few remarks about coming back to New York, our former champion, runner-up in that fabulous finish of 2 years ago, and maybe his comments about the dropping of rabbits or pacers for this year's race. Henrik is talking to us from, I believe, his home in Johannesburg, and is just back from a few days, he said, of vacation, I believe, in the bush, he said. So we welcome you back, Henrik, and if you could just make a couple remarks, that would be great. Henrik?
Yeah, thanks, Richard. Thanks, Mary, and hi to everybody who's in the conference. Yeah, I'm touched, to be named the first athlete to be invited. I have to thank the New York Roadrunner, Runners and Mary, everybody out there, thank you very much. And thanks for your comments. I'm touched, Mary. Like I always do, I'll start planning very well. I've actually started planning very well for the race on 3rd of November. And the fact that there's not going to be pacemakers, that the race is just going to be tactics from K1 to the last mile to the finish. Athlete needs to start preparing. Like I'm saying, I've started planning now how I want the race to go about tactic wise.
Thank you, Henrik. Now we will open it up. The questions to either both Mary and or Henrik. We'll start with Frank Litsky from the New York Times. Frank?
Henrik, how do you think the lack of a pace setter will affect the time? Will it make a slower race? Will it make any difference?
Hi, Frank. Yeah. I'm one of many athletes who support the cancellation of pacemakers. Mainly at New York. I mean, let's face it, we are not going for world record in New York. I mean, New York is a hard course. Everybody knows that one. So the pacemakers the value of the pacemakers in New York was just to take us through to next stop race, to get athletes not to race until, say, 25K, and then to start racing after that. And I have to admit, it's very difficult in a paced race. Once we are at 25 or say 30 Ks, it's very hard for any competitor to break the race, to run away from the field. It's not easy because by that time everybody's aware. Nobody's sleeping by that time. At 30 Ks, everybody's race. We are already tired. So in a paced race, the way I've seen it before, I've been involved in many paced races. You are bound to follow the pacemaker. Whether he's doing a good job or not, you are like bound. You are sitting there waiting. Sometimes worried, why are this? You can't say run away or break the whole thing. It's like you're spoiling. you feel like guilty. It's like you're spoiling the race. If you want to make a move at, say, 15K or at 10 miles or whatever, you feel guilty. You can't do that. You're going to look like a spoiler. So by getting rid of pacemaker, I think it's going to allow athletes to express themselves. I suspect the race is going to be fast, actually. Because, say, if one of us will try to run away at 5K or 10K, we'll follow him. And say by halfway, anyway, once we arrive halfway, the race is going to be fast because people are going to try to drop each other, you know. So having no pacemakers doesn't necessarily mean low times. You might be surprised to see a 2:08 or even a course record in an unpaced race.
Thank you, Henrik. Frank, a follow-up?
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
Thank you. Mike Sanrock from the Boulder Camera.
Hi, Mary Henrik. I had a question for Mary. Can you go over what happened in 2006 in terms of the pacemakers?
Yeah, sure. And basically, we had star-studded fields, and the athletes were counting on the pacers to be going a certain pace. And in New York, as we stated, the pacers are there more as escorts to settle the race down, get people started. And the women's pacer was confused and ran to pace, even though the women weren't going with her. So it just introduces this whole element about what the pacer's doing instead of what the other athletes are doing. And then on the men's side, we had one of our pacers drop out early.
Someone has joined the conference.
But what we basically found was that these star-studded athletes who won major titles were all spending the first half wondering what's going on with the pacer instead of what's going on with our competitors and how am I going to win this race. And it's almost like we've asked, as Henrik said, we've asked the athletes to turn their brains off and just get to mile 16 and instead of get out there and race. And I feel like we're actually helping them. This is a pure race. They don't have to worry about what the pacer's doing anymore. They just have to worry about themselves and the way they want to approach winning this race.
Mike, a follow-up?
Okay, I had a question for Henrik. Back in your 2000, a great race with Turgot, how did that race play out? Could you just remind us of when you took the lead and what were you racing the whole way?
Yeah. Hi, yeah. Let me just add to what Mary has just said for last year. Last year's race, in the technical meeting, if you remember, the pace was supposed to be 64. And then the following day, the pacemakers went 65.30 or 65.30-something, which was like a minute and a half slower. And then that's what caused that big bunch. They allowed everybody to come with the bunch, you know. We couldn't get the drinks, so it was a little bit hard to get your drinks at the aid stations, drink stations. So most of us were a little bit, you know, I was a little bit upset because I wanted a faster race to get the rhythm. You know, when you start, you need a rhythm, a faster rhythm. If you have trained fast, you need to run fast. Otherwise, your legs are going to lock. So when the pacemakers got out, some of us, our legs were... And so you switch off. So when we tried to run harder, we couldn't. So it was a little bit disappointing. And now to come to the race on 2005, myself and Turgot. You know, I was the defending champion. I won 2004. So 2005, I was the defending champion. And then Paul is the record holder. And then there were also a lot of guys who were contenders. So because in 2004, I won by breaking early at the First Avenue, just before First Avenue, going to First Avenue. I had no other strategies but to do the same thing. But just when I thought I was going to break at First Avenue, was it the Italian guy? What is his name?
Mr. Checo.
Yeah, Di Checo, yeah. He started earlier. He broke off earlier going up the bridge. So we had to chase him. And when I caught up with him, I was actually a little bit angry with him because he disturbed my, I mean, he spoiled my plan. So once I passed him, I had to put the hammer down. And I was feeling good that time. So I started surging. Because in training, I practiced surges. So I started playing along with the guys. And then it worked because I managed to drop a lot of guys. We were only the four of us. And then once you are a group of four in the lead, in your mind you start settling down. You know, you're like, at least I'm number four if I'm to fail. And then towards the finish in Central Park, I decided no, I'm not coming fourth. Actually, I want to win this thing because it was anyway my aim to defend the race. So, and Tegard was the main man to beat that day because he was the biggest threat to me, to stop me from defending. And then when he started passing me at by, I think, the last water point, he wanted to take over the race, to put the foot down. I didn't allow him. I decided I'm taking him to the line because I actually believed that day that I was going to win. That's why I took him to the line. If I didn't have this belief, I was going to let him win and just keep my second place safe. But I, you know, when you are in that kind of situation, only a win will satisfy you. For me, only when I'm racing, only a win satisfies me. Second place is like, what if, why, you know? Thank you.
And I'll just add there, you know, that race, I have a photo sitting here because I think it's the most inspiring finish I've certainly seen. And it's one of the best our sport's ever seen. And people talk to us all the time about it. Nobody has any idea what time they ran. They know that they were 0.3 seconds apart. And it, too, was another race in our history that made us say
the victory that matters,
the time that's run.
Thanks, Mike. Steve Nierman from the Washington Times. Steve?
Yes, hi. Hi, Mary and Henrik. Mary, what year did New York start hiring rabbits?
Well, it's interesting. As we go back in the history, it's not like all of a sudden we have a note, Pacers are in the race now. It looks like in the mid to late 90s, but, it, you know, the years of Alberto, Jeff Smith, all those guys and those big finishes ran without them. And then it looks like we mainly had them, but sometimes we didn't throughout those years. But it's pretty much probably the last 15 years or so.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, these were paid performances, I would imagine.
Yes, especially these last years, we have paid pacers to come in. There are some savings here. It's not a lot. We fly them in and pay for a few pacers. But they, in our case in New York, because we never wanted to be in a position where a pacer was in the race at the end, we think that that was disingenuous to the athletes to tell them they're there to pace them. So we contracted with them that they had to get out of the race and weren't eligible for the winnings.
Mm-hmm. What kind of range are we talking about?
$2,000.
Okay.
To less, you know, when it's a young, new one. But, you know, if you're going to have pacers, you better make sure you want to have the best pacers you can. And so you've got to pay an athlete of that level that can run that fast at 15K, 25K, 15 miles. You've got to make sure you're paying him something.
Right. Gotcha. Thanks.
You okay, Steve?
I'm good.
Yeah. Let's go to Bob Richards at the Chicago Sun-Times. Bob?
Yes, Mary. I was wondering, are you worried about the emergence of, like, unofficial, under-the-table-type pace setters who, as a result of not having any official pace setters, maybe, you know, teammates of some of the elites or shoe company-type situation?
That is certainly one of the risks that we considered. There are several risks in making this move, but we aren't here to we think we've got to shake up the status quo as we try to promote the athletes in the sport. And on balance, the risks were far outweighed by the potential benefits. in terms of that specific risk, we exert a large amount of control over our elite field. In fact, you can look for us to be even a little bit smaller on the men's field this year. As Henrik said last year, the men had some difficulty getting to elite fluids. We don't want that to be the case. So we tightly control that group. We're no longer in a position where any one agent will have a predominance of athletes. We pride ourselves on trying to work with all of our agents in our sport and having a wide array of athletes. Absolutely, you're always at risk that one's going to help another forget that they run for one agent or one coach or the like. But again, that's sort of part of the strategy, and we'll be trying to keep as balanced and tight a field as we can.
Bob, a follow-up?
Yeah, I was wondering, do you think this is going to ramp up any past rivalries with other marathons that maybe do have pace setters as far as going after the top athletes?
I think, you know, we already recruit for our events so that in many cases an athlete chooses Chicago or Berlin for a very different reason than they choose New York. So already we're very different in terms of the athletes we recruit in any given year and the athletes' goals. Two, each of our races, again, when you look at golf and tennis, we have our own distinct style and our own distinct flair. And, you know, as Henrik said it quite well, you don't come here to run world records. I don't think it will hurt our recruiting. It does underscore who we are and the clarity of why an athlete would come here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Peter Gambaccini from Runner's World. Peter?
Yeah, Mary just sort of started to touch on already answering this question a little bit, but I guess I'm sort of aware of the fact that some top athletes have, you know, almost have their own personal pace setters that their agent wants to get into the race as well, and also wants to get in, you know, maybe younger athletes who say will go 13 miles, 15 miles, 16 miles and get a taste of it and maybe come back next time. You know, so I guess in many instances they've made joint deals for the elite athlete plus those people. Is your stance going to, you think it's going to greatly change the way that you negotiate with those agents?
Well, it's interesting. Our stance is pretty much exactly what it was a year ago, and we just come out of many meetings in London where we said over and over again that, you know, we want the star, and we take one or two up-and-comers from groups where it makes sense. So that's the same thing we said last year. You know, we really are focused on highlighting the title winners, the big champions in our races, and you got to give a chance to other up-and-comers too. But if you've got two or three per agent, it's, again, on an Olympic model, you've got three on a team in the Olympics, and the Japanese, you know, certainly had times of working together, and other countries have worked together to get a gold medalist or get a medalist on the stand, and it's similar to that. So I don't think we're going to keep a tight, high-level field, but it's just part of the strategy that, you know, any individual has to be ready and prepared for. I think what's very interesting about this, going without pacers, is the athletes have to know the field even that much better. Everybody, I think they may be more closed vest when it comes to talking about their racing plans, but an athlete that wants to win this race better know every single person in the race, because before, it was not likely someone was going to take off before 16 or 25K. Now, there's a risk someone's going to go at 5K, and you better know if that's a legitimate athlete or not. So, again, it's going to require some more work, but we think in the end it's going to reward the overall top racer.
Peter, a follow-up?
Yeah, well, I know David's on the call as well. I don't know, maybe either David or Mary remembers this, but, you know, apropos of what you just said, the last race that I can recall, at least on the men's side, that was really broken open early was when Elmuaziz won here, and I'm just wondering, David, if you had any words with him afterwards, if he had talked about whether or not that was a strategy he had from the get-go, because obviously this is a guy who completely ignored any existence of pacers in the race.
And that was, David, if you want me, I can speak to it. That was his plan, as I understood it, and we talked to him, and we did have pacers. We didn't know till after it was his plan. And when we made this decision, one of our risks was that we'll see a race like that. That was not an exciting race for television. We used that race in 2000 as the benchmark to say to television, are you sure you're backing this suggestion? And they say, absolutely. I mean, when you look at our decades of racing, there's always a risk you're going to have a race like that. But I also think, to be quite honest, that our fields have gotten deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and are at a whole different level than that 2005 field, as good as it was.
2000.
Yeah. Thanks, Peter. We'll go to Jim Gerwick. Jim?
Yeah, speaking about the depth of the fields, how do you balance having a field that's sufficiently deep with one that's perhaps too deep? And I think I made the analogy last year that the races were kind of like a certain baseball team that's located right off the course that was filled with all-stars and everybody was waiting for somebody else to hit the home run. And we wound up with a lot of singles being hit. So how do you balance that, and what do you think is sort of an optimum?
We are happy to have every major star in our sport on the line. There's plenty of room for them. That said, beyond the stars, you do get into risk. You know, we've had groups of, when you look at it, 20, 30, 40 guys at different times. We're looking more of a tight field of 20 or so, and it's a constant readjustment. I mean, the women have a handful, and it. I look at this year's London as, if you can script a race when, just talk for a minute about who you want in there. For those who knew what was going on in the race, late in the race, we had a pack that included the Ramallah-Turgot rivalry, included the Limo-Lel rivalry, included the unknown in our Gumrai with his, but we knew he ran a 12:50 5K. We had Ryan Hall, another young debut, and it was a fascinating group that was left, and Gomez, who'd won New York. And, you know, there's plenty of room for names like that, and from people in our industry to know it. We don't need to have a group of 40 that nobody knows who they are.
Jim, a follow?
No, I think that's good.
All right. Liz Robbins, Liz?
Yeah, thanks, Richard. Just a quick question for Hendrick. Can you just say what your schedule is before New York, what you're planning to run this summer, and if that will differ from your previous years?
I'm nearly on the same schedule as when I won and when I was second, 2004-2005. It's a championship year, so I'll be in Osaka. And then I'll have a half marathon, maybe two half marathons. That's it. I mean, one half marathon before, say, Osaka, and one half marathon before New York. Just to, you know, always get into a half marathon to gauge on my fitness. You know, just kind of race preparation.
Where will those half marathons be, Hendrick?
Hello?
Hello? Yes, where will those half marathons be?
For now, it's not yet confirmed, but I'm going to talk to my manager. I'm hoping to get into New York, actually, New York half, and then and maybe Great North, because, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And will you do, how much of your training will be in South Africa?
Here at home, I'm just training. Most of our training is going to be here, actually.
Okay.
I mean, if I'm coming to New York, it's like, I come to New York, it's just, I'll come maybe beginning of the week, say on a Wednesday. I always prefer Wednesday or Thursday, as late as possible, because it works for me. I mean, and then, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
That's August 5th, our New York City half, presented by Nike, that we are quite hopeful Hendrick will be one of our headliners.
Is that okay, Liz?
Yep, that's great. Thanks so much.
I believe we have Pam from Road Race Management. Pam?
Yes, thank you. Mary, this question, do you think that the World Marathon Majors, can you see them doing this collectively at some point, or do you think that every race is different and each will go their own way?
I think this is a classic area where we're all very different races, and I don't see us moving in concert in this way. I do see us each continuing to build the races that we have, but I don't see us moving in concert on this issue.
Okay. And just in general, you might have sort of touched on this already, but do you think that the use of pacers detracts from TV broadcasts in most cases? Or
Absolutely. You know, this is a sport where we are trying to build stars, and if the stars are hidden from view for half the race, I think it's a disservice to the stars and doesn't support our efforts to build them up.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Pam. John Elliott, John?
Yeah, a couple questions. First, I know time bonuses are a big part of the compensation system for the race. So there's definitely a desire to see runners run quickly. Any thought about changing that structure, and or how does this, you know, relate to that?
Actually, right now our plan is to leave the time bonuses as they are. Our time bonuses are incredibly generous, and we think that when you look at them and look at them compared to other races and other races that have similar courses, they're quite rich. And that will be one of the components that help ensure that this that the pace keeps moving. That said, every year we expect to blow out the time bonus budget. And when push comes to shove, athletes come here to win. And we have found it's like they completely forget what time bonuses are relate to what time, and they get out there and race. So while we think it's going to help ensure the pace keeps moving, I think the title in New York is what's worth most, and probably even this won't, our rich time bonuses won't dictate a strategy to win this race.
John, a follow-up?
Yeah, and then one item on the press release, it said the concept will be reviewed and evaluated after the marathon to determine future plans. Could you, what would lead you to believe it was not successful or was successful?
First, I think we've got to give things, you know, a couple of years to really see if a decision like this makes sense or not. The only thing I can see that would make us put it back in is if we lost competitive races, and if instead it, for whatever reason, looked more like a time trial because somebody who takes off so early is all by themselves. That can happen as it did in 2000 in any good given year, but I think if we look at this over a few years, our hope is to see more racing and tuning in earlier and caring what's going on.
Thank you, John. I believe Weldon Johnson. Weldon?
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't really have a question. I just think it makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
How fast Kentucky Derby's won in, so.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Weldon. I believe we had one or two people that might have jumped on late. If I've missed them, if they could identify themselves. Okay. We've gone through the lineup here. If there's anybody who would like to have a quick follow-up, Frank?
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
Mike Sandrock?
No, fine. Thank you.
Peter?
Yeah, just one. I'm remembering, you know, we've talked about the men a lot, but I think a few years ago, there was a woman, there's a famous Irish woman who was making her marathon debut and sort of complained about how slow things were, and that made her feel sort of heavy-legged because she wasn't used to running that way. And I think another woman who's now a world cross-country champion was complaining about the same thing. And, Amir, I'm just wondering, when you heard those kind of comments, did that make you sort of exasperated about this whole pacing issue? Because it seems, you know, when I would think that, you know, if they think they're suffering through this, like, slow, heavy-leggedness, that shouldn't the impulse have been to sort of make their own pace?
Exactly. That year when Sonia and the whole, it was a similar star-studded year, and, yes, same response of, oh, did we do something that held them back? Because we don't ever want to be part of restricting the athlete's performance in any way, and that was one of the things that made us start thinking about it. And this has been something we have considered for the last few years. And I'll be honest, I was in early days, I was so afraid of the show that we wouldn't have racers. And over time have come to think, and all of us as a team here have come to think that it's worth the risk we're taking because these are great stars. Let's get them on television. Let's get them off front, and let's make it interesting from the get-go and not hold them back.
Thank you, Peter. Pam?
I think I'm set. Thanks.
Bob Richards? Bob?
I'm fine. Thanks.
Jim Gerwick?
No, I think I'm good.
Liz? All right. Steve Nierman? Steve?
Yeah, just a quick question for Mary. You mentioned that it was after this year's race that you really wanted to address the pacer issue, but has this been kind of lingering for more than just this past year?
We've been looking at this for several years. Rich and I once spent 3 hours in the London airport debating this issue, and it must have been 3 years ago.
You guys are exciting people.
Yeah, we've got a lot to talk about, but Richard and Sam and David and our whole team, we've been working with what it was. Is when I started, I was told TV didn't want to do it, and we really assumed that for so many years. And then last year, I said to our television partner, "What do you think?" And they said, "Oh, please do it. It's like telling someone not to tune in to the second half of the race." And we spent a lot of time with television here saying this is a sporting event that deserves coverage, and we deserve to make it as compelling as we can. How are we going to do it? And they said, let's go for it. So it's been a few years, but last year sealed the fate.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Again, I think, Frank, did I start with you again? Did you get a chance for...
I'm fine. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you. John Elliott, John?
Do you use pacers in the half marathon or any other events, or are there any thoughts about that?
You know, most in New York, our philosophy here, we are all about building races in the sport, so we tend not to use them. We don't have pacers in the New York City half, or didn't last year for our first time. We don't have them at the 8K. We don't have them at the Healthy Kidney, and we usually don't have them at the Mini. That's not to say we won't sometime, but it's... You know, New York is the big stage, and we like to get all about the win, and we think our sport, you know, track and field was hurt for a while, going so heavy on time, and we just think the more we're focused on the win and the podium, the better we're going to do at building a sport and getting people caring who it is that's standing there and following one athlete against another.
Great, thanks.
Thank you, John. I think that just about does twice through for the group. I'm going to let Mary make a closing remark and, again, thank our special guest calling us from about 7 o'clock in the evening over in South Africa, our former champion and friend, Hendrik Ramalho. Mary?
Thank you, Richard. Just thanks to everybody. We take no decision lightly at New York Roadrunners, and there are risks associated with this one, but we think it's the right thing to do to try to build our athletes and our sport. And what we can do at our part in New York. So we're looking forward to a very big weekend in November with America's race on Saturday, with the Olympic trials, and a big international field on Sunday. And we're so pleased to have Hendrik leading the way with that group with our first announcement today.
Again, thanks to everybody. Thank you, Hendrik. Please contact myself or Sarah in our office if you have any questions or follow-up. We did take some notes that we will be distributing from the call. We thank everybody for their coverage and look forward to talking and working with everybody again very, very shortly. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Henry.
Thank you.